And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, it's another exciting day. And today is March 5th, 64th day of the year. 301 days remain till the year's over with. On this day in history, in 363, Roman Emperor Julian leaves Antioch with an army of 90,000 to attack the Sasanian Empire. During that campaign, Roman Emperor Julian would die. 1046, Nasir Khusraw begins a 7-year Middle Eastern journey that he'll later describe in his book, Sefarnameh. 1279, the Livonian Order is defeated in the Battle of Escrucho by the Grand Duchy of Lithuania. 1496, King Henry VII of England issues letters patent to John Cabot and his sons, authorizing them to go explore unknown lands. 1616, Nicholas Copernicus' book on the revolutions of the heavenly spheres is added to the Index of Forbidden Books 73 years after it was published. It's right above Dr. Seuss on the list of forbidden books. 1766, Antonio de Ulloa, the first Spanish governor of Louisiana, arrives in New Orleans. 1770, Boston Massacre. 5 Americans, including Crispus Attucks, are fatally shot by British troops in an event that would contribute to the outbreak of the American Revolutionary War 5 years later. 1811, Peninsula War. A French force under the command of Marshal Victor is routed while trying to prevent an Anglo-Spanish-Portuguese army from lifting the siege of Cadiz in the Battle of Barossa. 1824, First Anglo-Burmese War. The British officially declare war on Burma. It just took them a while to find it. 1825, Roberto Cofresi, one of the last successful Caribbean pirates, is defeated in combat and captured by authorities. 1836, Samuel Colt patents the first production model revolver. It was in .34 caliber. 1850, the Britannia Bridge across the Menai Strait between the island of Anglesey and the mainland of Wales is opened up. 1860, Parma, Tuscany, Modena, and Romagna vote in referendums to join the Kingdom of Sardinia. Sardines were in short supply. 1868, Mephistopheles, an opera by Arrigo Boito, receives its premiere performance at La Scala. 1872, George Westinghouse patents the air brake. 1906, Moro Rebellion. U.S. Army troops bring overwhelming force against the native Moros in the first battle of Badajo. Only 6 Moros survive. 1912, Italo-Turkish War. Italian forces are the first to use airships for military purposes. They use them for reconnaissance behind the Turkish lines. 1931, the British Raj, Gandhi-Irwin Pact is signed. Now, the Gandhi-Irwin Pact was a political agreement signed by Mahatma Gandhi and Lord Irwin, Viceroy of India, right before the Second Roundtable Conference in London. Before this, Lord Irwin, who was viceroy, as I said, announced on October 1929 a vague offer of dominion status for British-occupied India at some unspecified future and a roundtable conference to discuss a future constitution. Basically, we'll give you what you want sometime. 1933, Adolf Hitler's Nazi Party gets 43.9% at the Reichstag elections. That allows the Nazis to later pass the Enabling Act and establish a dictatorship. 1     When the news line rings, I almost always answer it. 1936, the first flight of the K-5054, the first prototype submarine Spitfire advanced monoplane fighter aircraft in the UK. 1939, Spanish Civil War. The National Defense Council seizes control of the Republican government in a coup d'etat. They have the intention of negotiating an end to the war. 1940, six high-ranking members of the Soviet Politburo, including Stalin, signed an order for the execution of 25,700 Polish intelligentsia. That includes 14,700 Polish POWs in what will become known as the Katyn Massacre. 1942, World War II. Japanese forces capture Batavia, capital of Dutch East Indies, which is left undefended after withdrawal of the KNIL garrison and Australian Black Force Battalion to Badenzorg and Bandung. 1943, first flight of the Gloucester Meteor, Britain's first combat jet aircraft. 1944, the Red Army begins the Uman-Batosani Offensive in Western Ukrainian SSR. 1946, Churchill coins the phrase Iron Curtain in his speech at Westminster College in Missouri. 1953, Joseph Stalin, the longest-serving leader of the Soviet Union, dies at his Volynsko Daka in Moscow after suffering a cerebral hemorrhage 4 days before. 1960, Indonesian President Sukarno dismissed a D1 Perwakilan Rakyat, 155 democratically elected parliament. The 1955 democratically elected parliament replaced with a parliament made up of his own selected members. 1963, American country music stars Patsy Cline, Hawkshaw Hawkins, Cowboy Copas, and their pilot Randy Hughes are killed in a plane crash in Camden, Tennessee. 1965, March Intifada. A leftist uprising erupts in Bahrain against the British colonial presence. 1966, BOAC Flight 911. A Boeing 707 breaks apart in midair due to clear air turbulence and crashes into Mount Fuji in Japan. Kills all 124 people on board. 1970, the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons goes into effect after ratification by 43 nations. Which signaled the beginning of all the secret projects to create new nuclear weapons. 1974, Yom Kippur War. Israeli forces withdraw from the west bank of the Suez Canal. 1978, the Landsat 3 is launched from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. 1979, Soviet probes Venera 11, Venera 12, and a German-American solar satellite Helios 2 all are hit by off-the-scale gamma rays, leading to the discovery of soft gamma repeaters. 1981, the ZX81, a pioneering British-owned computer, is launched by Sinclair Research. It would sell over 1.5 million units around the world. 1982, Soviet probe Venera 14 lands on Venus. 2003, in Haifa, 17 Israeli civilians are killed in a Haifa bus suicide bombing. 2012, Tropical Storm Irina kills over 75 as it passes through Madagascar. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. An unusual number. Christian Feast Day, Ciaran of Segar, John Joseph of the Cross, Piran, Theopolis, Bishop of Caesarea, Tetmar of Minden, Custom Chiefs Day in Vanuatu, Day of Physical Culture and Sport in Azerbaijan, Learn from Li Fang Day in China, St. Piran's Day in Cornwall, and Athas Day in Kerala. We have some unusual observances around the world. 1179, the Third Lateran Council, it's the 11th Ecumenical Council, opens in Rome. In 1496, King Henry VII grants John Cabot, Giovanni Caboto, a commission. 1558, Smoking tobacco is introduced into Europe by Spanish physician Francisco Fernandez. 1623, the first American temperance law is enacted in Virginia. 1645, the Battle of Jankau in Bohemia. Sweden defeats Holy Roman Emperor Ferdinand III. 1651, the South Sea Dike in Amsterdam breaks after a major storm. 1684, Emperor Leopold I, Poland and Venice signed the Helig Covenant in Linz. 1743, the first U.S. religious journal, The Christian History, published in Boston. 1766, Don Antonio de Iolo takes possession of Louisiana Territory from the French. 1770 Massacre, which took place in 1770. Took place on King Street, as a matter of fact. The British soldiers killed five men who were in a crowd throwing snowballs, rocks, and sticks at them. The first one to die, of course, was African-American Crispus Attucks. He's been considered a black martyr. 1774, John Hancock delivered the fourth annual Massacre Day Oration, which was a commemoration of the Boston Massacre, and denounced the presence of British troops in Boston that enhanced Hancock's stature as a leading patriot. 1783, King Stanislaus Augustus Poniatowski grants rights to Jews in Kovno. 1793, French troops are defeated by Austrian forces and Liege is recaptured. 1795, Amsterdam celebrates revolution on the dam at the Square of Revolution. 1795, the Treaty of Basel. Prussia ends its war with France. 1821, President Monroe is the first U.S. president inaugurated on March 5th because the 4th that year fell on Sunday. 34 caliber pistol that I talked about that Samuel Colt manufactured in 1836, that was called the Texas model. 1841, the first continuous filibuster in U.S. Senate began on this date, lasted until March 11th. And that's only because the filibuster had to go to the bathroom. 1842, over 500 Mexican troops led by Rafael Vasquez invaded Texas, occupied San Antonio, and then headed back to the Rio Grande. 1853, piano company Steinway & Sons was founded by Heinrich Steinweg. Later, he changed his name to Henry Steinway in New York City. 1856, the Covent Garden Opera House in London is destroyed by fire. 1856, Georgia, which has always been first in figuring out a way to get more taxes, became the first state to regulate railroads. 1862, Union troops under Brigadier General Wright occupy Fernandina, Florida during the American Civil War. I've been there. Very interesting fort. 1864, first track meet between Oxford and Cambridge. 1868, that boon to American office workers, the stapler, was patented in England by C.H. Gould. 1868, the U.S. Senate organizes to decide on charges to be brought against President Andrew Johnson. 1894, Seattle authorizes the first municipal employment office in the U.S. In 1900, on this date, American Hall of Fame is founded. In 1904, Nikola Tesla, an electrical and mechanical engineer who, by all accounts, was a genius, described the process of ball lightning formation in the electrical world and engineer. 1907, on this date, the first radio broadcast of a musical composition hits the airwaves. 1908 was the first ascent of Mount Erebus in Antarctica. 1912, the Spanish steamer Principe de Asturias sinks northeast of Spain. 500 die in that sinking. 1915, the LZ-33, a Zeppelin, is damaged by enemy fire and stranded south of Boston. It's damn hard to carry one of those things home. 1917, Woodrow Wilson's inaugurated for a second term. He was the 28th president. 1921, the Durban Land Alienation Ordinance is passed, enabling the Durban City Council to exclude Indians from ownership or occupation of property in white areas in South Africa. 1921, on this date, the U.S. warned Costa Rica and Panama to settle its disputes peacefully. 1923, Montana and Nevada become the first states to enact old age pension laws. 1924, the Computing, Tabulating, and Recording Corporation becomes IBM. 1924, King Hussein of Hejaz appoints himself Caliph. 1927, 1,000 U.S. Marines land in China to protect American property. 1933, FDR proclaimed a 10-day bank holiday. If you didn't have money in your pocket, you won't get it from the bank. 1934, Mother-in-Law's Day was first celebrated in Amarillo, Texas. 1942, Bosnia, Tito. He was president of Yugoslavia and a revolutionary. His name was Josip Broz Tito. He established the 3rd Proletariat Brigade in Bosnia. All these high-sounding names simply mean he formed a militia. 1943, the RAF bombs Essen, Germany. 1945, the Allies bombed The Hague in the Netherlands. 1945, the U.S. 7th Army Corps captures Cologne. 1956, on this date, was the first time the movie King Kong was televised on TV. 1958, Explorer 2 failed to reach orbit. On this day in 1960, Elvis Presley ended his 2-year hitch in the U.S. Army. And on this day, the aquatic ape hypothesis originated when Alistair Hardy announced his idea that ape-human divergence may have been due to a coastal phase. Those who didn't progress went to Congress. Those who did formed the human race. Well, let's see what else we got. In 1966, the U.S. performs a nuclear test at the Nevada test site. If I'm not mistaken, that's the one that was upwind of where John Wayne and his production company were filming a movie. In 1970, the SDS Weathermen terrorist group bombs 18 West 11th Street in New York City. In 1976, the British pound fell below $2 in value against the U.S. dollar for the first time. Yeah, let's see. In 1984, Supreme Court in a 5-4 ruling said cities can use public money for nativity scenes. In 1989, the 19th Easter Seal Telethon raised a record $37,002,000. In 1992, the Ethics Committee in the House voted to reveal congressmen who bounced checks at the Congressional Bank. Of course, they would never do that because too many Democrats on that list. Just like the grand jury indictment here, 168 names on it, and Holder, who was Attorney General at that time, quashed it, said there were too many good Democrats accused of crimes on it. All right. That's our history session for today. We've been talking about strange creatures from the deep. We talked about mermaids yesterday. We're going to talk about mermen today. Now, George Brisbane Scott Douglas was the author of such books as Scottish Fairy and Folk Tales and New Border Tales. And he had a fascination for mysteries of the sea, particularly mermaids, and far less mentioned matter of mermen. He said about mermaids and mermen that there are many strange tales emanating from Scotland's Shetland Isles. According to these stories, beneath the depths of the ocean, an atmosphere exists adapted to the respiratory organs of certain beings resembling and formed the human race, but possessed of surpassing beauty, of limited supernatural powers, and liable to the incident of death. They dwell in a wide territory of the globe, far below the region of fishes, over which the sea, like the cloudy canopy of the sky, rolls. And they possess habitations constructed of the pearl and coral productions of the ocean. Now, having lungs not adapted to a watery medium but to the nature of atmospheric air, it'd be impossible for them to pass through the volumes of water that intervene between the submarine and submarine world. If it wasn't for the extraordinary power they inherit of altering the skin of some animal capable of existing in the sea, which they're able to occupy by a sort of demonical possession. Now, Douglas went on to note that most people, having only a cursory knowledge of the mermaid phenomenon, would likely be completely unaware of their existence. He acknowledged, although most people viewed such creatures as of an animal human above the waist, but terminating below in the tail and fins of a fish, and that was far from always being the case. He explained that the most favorite form they took was actually that of the larger seal. He went on to explain that possessing an amphibious nature, they are enabled to not only exist in the ocean, but to land on some rock, where they frequently lighten themselves of their sea dress, resume their proper shape, with much curiosity examine the nature of the upper world belonging to the human race. Unfortunately, though, each merman or merwoman possesses but one skin, enabling the individual to ascend the seas, and if on visiting a boat of man, the garb be lost, that being would unavoidably become an inhabitant of the earth. Now, Douglas was somebody who wasn't only deeply familiar with merman lore, but somebody who collected a number of fascinating accounts of encounters with what appear to have been, or maybe incredibly, real half-man, half-fish-like entities. One particular story he told was a story of a boat's crew who landed for the purpose of attacking the seals lying in the hollows of the crags on one of the stacks. The men stunned a number of the animals, and while they're in this state, stripped them of their skins with the fat attached to them. And leaving the carcasses on the rock, they were about to set off for the shore of Popper Stour when such a tremendous swell arose that everyone flew quickly to the boat. All succeeded in getting into the boat except one man who had impotently lingered behind. Well, the crew was unwilling to leave a companion to perish on the skerries, but the surge increased so fast that after many unsuccessful attempts to bring the boat close into the stack, they had to leave him to his own fate. Now, in discussing how things quickly developed in a strange and unforeseen fashion, Douglas went on to say, a stormy night came on and a deserted Shetlander saw no prospect before him but that of perishing from cold and hunger, or being washed into the sea by the breakers that threatened to dash over the rocks. At length he saw many of the seals who, in their flight, had escaped the attack, approach the skerry, disrobed themselves of their amphibious hides, and resumed the shape of the sons and daughters of the ocean. Their first object was to assist in the recovery of their friends who had been stunned by the clubs, but while in that state had been deprived of their skins. When the flayed animals regained their sensibility, according to Douglas, they resumed their proper form of mermen and merwomen and began to lament in a mournful way, widely accompanied by the storm that was raging around, the loss of their sea dress that would prevent them from again enjoying their native azure atmosphere and coral matches that lay below the deep waters of the Atlantic. The chief lamentation of the mermen, according to Douglas, was for one Olivetinus, the son of Georga, who, having been stripped of his sealskin, would be forever parted from his mates and condemned to become an outcast inhabitant of the upper world. Now, their song was at length broken off by observing one of their enemies viewing, with shivering limbs and looks of comfortless despair, the wild waves that dashed over the stack. Georga immediately conceived the idea of rendering subservient to the advantage of her son the perilous situation of the man. She addressed him with mildness, proposing to carry him safe on her back across the sea to Popper Stour, on condition of receiving the sealskin of Olivetinus. So a bargain was struck. Georga clad herself in her amphibious garb, but the Shetlander, alarmed at the sight of the stormy mane he was to ride on, prudently begged leave of the matron for his better preservation. He might be allowed to cut a few holes in her shoulders and flanks in order to procure, beneath the skin and the flesh, a better fastening for his hands and feet. Well, she agreed, so the man grasped the neck of the seal, committed himself to her care, and she took him safely at Acrisgiota and Popper Stour, from which place he immediately repaired to Ischio at Hamnavoe, where the skin was deposited, and honorably fulfilled his part of the contract by giving her the means by which her son could again revisit the ethereal space of which the sea spread its green mantle. These creatures seem, the mermen and merwomen, seem to have a sense of honor, so to speak. Then we have Mokele Mbembe. For at least two centuries, there's been talk of a deadly, violent monster lurking in the deep, dark waters of Africa. Particularly so in the Congo. Lakes and rivers and swampy environments are those most preferred by the monsters become known as Mokele Mbembe. In English, it means the one who stops the flow of rivers. And it is a most apt name, since the Mokele Mbembe is said to be the size of an elephant, or even bigger, and has a long, muscular neck. Although at a local level, the existence of the creature was known for generations, it wasn't until 1980 that the rest of the world, thanks to mainstream media, got to hear about this mysterious creature, which sounds not unlike some surviving relic of the Jurassic era. It was in that year that Dr. Roy Mackel headed off to Africa to try and determine the true nature of the Mokele Mbembe. Now, it's important to note Mackel was not some wide-eyed amateur sleuth. He was a biologist and a biochemist who spent much of his time working at the University of Chicago. Mackel had the very good fortune to interview a large number of native people who had seen Mokele Mbembe, who had heard of its exploits. Having listened carefully to what the witnesses said and studied their descriptions of the appearance of the monster, he came to an astonishing conclusion that these creatures were very possibly sauropods. Now, we're talking about huge reptiles that we were told became extinct 65 million years ago, when the dinosaurs' rule of the planet came to a crashing end, maybe as a result of a comet or a massive meteorite slamming into the Earth. 7 years after his trip to Africa, he wrote a book about his travels, and it was called In Search of Mokele Mbembe. Well, he wasn't the only person to seek out the truth of the monsters of the Congo. The late J. Richard Greenwell also spent a lot of time trying to resolve the riddle of the Mokele Mbembe. His target was the Lakula River, a place where he stumbled on a number of massive tracks that suggested the presence of a huge lumbering beast that spent time in both water and on land. 1986, a man named Rory Nugent caught sight of a long-necked animal in the Lakula Swamp. That added further weight to the theory that the Mokele Mbembe are sauropods. The strangest part of the story is that Nugent managed to secure a couple of crib photos of the animal. They could potentially have resolved the matter once and for all, except for one thing. The native people of the area viewed the Mokele Mbembe as a supernatural beast. As a result, they demanded Nugent destroy his pictures, or the monster would kill them all. And given the hostility he encountered, Nugent maybe wisely did as he was ordered. Then we have Mokele Mbembe seeker Bill Gibbons, who tells an interesting story from the 1960s. He said, about 1960, the forest-dwelling pygmies of the Lake Tele region, that's the Bangomba tribe, fished daily in the lake near the Malebos, or water channels situated at the north end of the lake. These channels merge with the swamp and were used by Mokele Mbembes to enter the lake where they'd browse on the vegetation. This daily excursion into the lake by these creatures disrupted the pygmies' fishing activities. Eventually, they decided to erect a stake barrier across the Malebo in order to prevent the creatures from getting to the lake. When two of the animals were observed attempting to break through the barrier, the pygmy speared one of the animals to death and cut it up into pieces. But due to the size of the creature, this task apparently took several days. It was described as being bigger than a forest elephant with a long neck, a small snake-like head, or lizard-like head, which is decorated with a comb-like frill. And even today, the search for Mokele Mbembe continues. Richard Freeman of the Center for Fortean Zoology traveled to the domain of the monster in 06, and while he believes the creature still exists, he strongly suspects it's an unknown type of monitor lizard. Imagine a 30-foot-long, royally pissed-off Komodo dragon, and you get an idea of what Freeman has in mind in his research. And then we have the Monster of the Mere. It all began Valentine's Day in 2002 when a Lancashire, England newspaper announced that something had been attacking swans at a picturesque, otherwise tranquil nature preserve in the north of England. Eyewitnesses had reported a giant unknown creature been seen dragging fully grown swans underneath the water. Those swans were never seen again. Location was the Wildfowl and Wetlands Trust Reserve at Martin Mere in Ormskirk in Lancashire. When the media started reporting the beast was the size of a small car, things really got rolling in a publicity-like manner. Pat Wasniewski, the reserve's manager, said whatever was out there must have been pretty big to pull the swan back into the water. Swans weigh up to 13 kilos, which is about 30 pounds, give or take. This could be an extremely large pike or a Wells catfish. Wasniewski had a good reason to take the matter seriously, as 4 years before, in 1998, he'd spotted something large and dark circling in the mirror. Much to his concern, of course. It didn't take long for a team of intrepid investigators from Britain's premier monster hunting group, the Center for Fortean Zoology, to head from their home base in the south of England to Martin Mere. And it was certainly an ambitious project, led by the director, John Downs, and with backup provided by Richard Freeman, former head zookeeper at Leicestershire's Twycross Zoo. In no time at all, the story went from one of a mystery fish to a tale involving dragons, unexplained ancient human mutilation, and even a resident mermaid. Of course, much of this brouhaha was due to media hype and sensationalism, but people are clearly seeing something out of the ordinary. Center for Fortean Zoology is determined to know exactly what it was. Freeman and Downs undertook numerous interviews with local folks who had seen the creature, and they were pretty much unanimous. It was a powerful, fast-swimming creature with a slick, shiny, muscular back that moved with astonishing speed. It was thanks to Freeman's dedication that in July of 2002, he finally caught sight of this creature. Although it was only in view for moments, he was pretty sure what he encountered in the dark waters was a Wells catfish. But this was no ordinary Wells catfish. It was huge. In all likelihood, it was also very old, somewhere in the region no less than 100 years old. The older the Wells, the bigger its size, seems to be the rule. And Freeman opined that it would probably manage to successfully avoid all and one and all for decades, happily living on the local fish and bird population. And of course, who would believe it if somebody occasionally reported seeing a monster fish in Martin Mere? Probably no one until, for whatever reason, the creature made its presence known more and more in the summer of 2002. Sightings have subsided in recent years, leading to the possibility that this immense car-sized creature might have died or retreated to the lower muddy depths of the mere to avoid detection and media attention. Keep that latter possibility in mind should you ever visit Martin Mere and decide to go for a paddle. You might do so at your own cost and possibly at the expense of a few toes or even your life. Well, we're going to talk about Loch Morar. And unlike Loch Ness, Loch Morar is an isolated, seldom visited loch. It's bereft of much in the way of a population and not particularly easy to get to. Now, if you make mention of Scottish Lake monsters to most people, they'll inevitably conjure up imagery of the world's most famous unknown water beast, the Loch Ness Monster. Well, it's a little known fact, but there are more than a few Scottish lakes that have legends of diabolical creatures inhabiting them. And while many of the stories are decidedly fragmentary in nature, some of them are not. And that brings us to Loch Morar and the world of Morag. It's just over 11.5 miles in length, has the distinction of being the deepest body of fresh water in the British Isles. The depth is just over 1,000 feet. Unlike Loch Ness, the water of which is almost black, Loch Morar can boast of having practically clear water. It takes its name from the village of Morar, which is situated close by, specifically at the western side of the loch, the site of the Battle of Morar. That was a violent, death-filled confrontation between the Mackenzie and the MacDonald clans. As for Morag, the monster that's said to inhabit the lake, there are many stories. Now, what makes them so different to the ones coming out of Loch Ness, though, is not the description of the creature, but that such reports are often hard to uncover. Unlike Loch Ness, Loch Morar is an isolated, seldom visited loch, as I said before. The result is that tourists to Scotland very rarely visit this particular loch, and that goes for native Scots as well. For that reason, just like Las Vegas, what happens at Loch Morar very often is destined to stay at Loch Morar. In spite of this, there are enough classic cases on record to strongly suggest strange things do take place at this isolated body of water. One of the earliest reports on record came from a man named James McDonald, who claimed a sighting of a three-humped creature snaking through the waters. This was one cold, dark night in January of 1887. Rather ominously, superstitious locals perceived this as distinctly ill omen. The three sections were seen as death, a coffin, and a grave. Such was the fear the villagers had that that monster that lived in their midst. 8 years later, Sir Theodore Brinkman and his wife were fishing at the loch when a long thing shaped like an upturned boat came to the top. One of the locals, a man named McLaurin, said it would just be the monster, nothing to worry about. An astonishing sighting occurred in 1948 when a man named Alexander McDonald saw one of the morags. Actually, on the bank of the shore at Bricorina Point. After a few moments, it belly flopped back into the water and vanished. The creature was described as being the size of an elephant, and needless to say, there's no known indigenous creature in the British Isles that rivals an elephant in size. That same year, a number of people, led by Mr. John Gillies, caught sight of an approximately 30-foot-long animal, displaying no fewer than four humps. And in August of 1968, John McVarish had a close view of an unknown animal in Loch Morar. This one displayed a snake-like head of about 6 feet in length and had very dark or black skin. But without a doubt, the most amazing and for the witness nerve-wracking encounter occurred on the night of August 16, 1969. That was when William Simpson and Duncan McDonald were traveling on the waters. They were near the west end of the loch. Suddenly, out of nowhere, a large animal, they estimated 30 feet in length, loomed into view and actually collided with their motorboat. Or maybe a better word would be rammed their motorboat. Well, Simpson tried to blast the creature with a shotgun, and at that point it sank beneath the water. As a result of the ear-splitting sound of the gun, both men concluded rather than as a result of Simpson having actually hit the creature. As for what the morags might really be, monster hunter Richard Freeman says, as with the Nessie, I think the best bet are giant sterile eels. The common eel swims out to the Sargasso Sea to breed and die. Baby eels follows the scent trails back to their ancestral freshwater homes, and the cycle begins all over again. Sometimes, though, a mutation occurs and the eel is sterile. These stay in freshwater and keep on growing. Known as eunuch eels, nobody knows how old they get or how big. One theory suggests that these rare, naturally occurring mutations may now be on the increase due to pollution. PCBs and beta blocker chemicals have long been implicated in causing sterility in fish. Maybe they could be causing eunuch eels in the deep lakes of Scotland. And that's a question for which we do not have an answer. Well, let's talk about Morguar. In August of 2010, English author and seeker of all things weird, Elizabeth Randall, said according to a sensational article that appeared in the pages of the British Daily Mail newspaper, a picture's been circulating on the internet purporting to show a sea monster that so far seems to have eluded identification. It was seen off of Saltern Cove in Devon in the UK and has been dubbed by many as the new Nessie. The image appears to show a greenish-brown, long-necked something with a reptilian-like head that was trailing a shoal of fish about 30 yards offshore. According to reports, the fish actually beached themselves seconds later to get away from the creature. Elizabeth went on to say, the photo was sent to the Marine Conservation Society, who have still to decide exactly what it might be. Theories range from a sea serpent to a saltwater crocodile. The lady who took the photo at first thought it might be a turtle, but the Marine Conservation Society said that not only do turtles not chase fish, but the description just doesn't fit. Meanwhile, talking about this same affair, Jonathan Downs of the Center for Fortean Zoology who is said to be an expert on reports of strange and unknown animals, said to me, "I think it's a basking shark. I think that what appears to be its back is its tail and the head is the tip of its nose. But wouldn't I love to be proved wrong?" Others suggest that nothing more than a turtle was possibly the culprit. Photographs were taken by one of the witnesses, Gil Pierce, clearly demonstrated that the neck of the creature was much too long for it to be that of a regular turtle. Pierce took the photo July 27th and subsequently reported the details of the encounter to the Marine Conservation Society. And a spokesman for that organization, Claire Fisher, told the press, "Gil Pierce spotted the creature about 20 meters from the bay at Salton Cove near Goodrington. It was observed at about 15:30 on the 27th of July, but by the time she had got her camera, it had moved further out. She spotted it following a shell of fish, which beached themselves in Salton Cove. The creature remained in the sea and then went out again and followed the shoal, which indicates it's not a turtle, as they only eat jellyfish. We would love to know if other people have seen anything like this in the same area and might help clear up the mystery. It's possible what was seen was Morguar, a sea serpent-style beast that has been reportedly seen for decades in and around Falmouth Bay in Cornwall, England, which very notably is situated only one county away from where this latest incident took place. Variously described as looking like a giant serpent, a monstrous eel, even a supposedly extinct plesiosaur. Morguar is first viewed in September 1975 by two witnesses who claimed to have seen the humped animal with stumpy horns and with bristles that ran along the length of its long neck. It apparently had a conger eel in its mouth. A whole wave of startling encounters with the creature allegedly occurred during the period 1975 to 1976, and such reports continue to surface sporadically from time to time and from this same location. So did Morguar possibly decide to take a trip along the coast for a vacation and entertain the nation's media? Well, that might be true. You never know. How about we talk about the Narrabeen Lagoon Monster? Well, the question has come up, what's the strangest unknown animal lurking in the woods, jungle, or mountain ranges of our world? And frankly, there could be many answers. And each and every one of those answers deals with an odd creature. I mean, how would you describe Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, and the Chupacabra, other than downright weird? But there's one that's apparently far more weirder than others. Beyond any shadow of a doubt, Sydney, Australia can claim fame to having played host to one of the most mystifying and bizarre of all creatures ever encountered. After all, how would you describe a diminutive beast that looks like an elephant but walks on its hind legs and surfaces to the depths of nothing less than a dark lagoon? Well, this is exactly what a woman named Mabel Walsh encountered in Narrabeen, a beachside suburb of Sydney, Australia, back in the late 1960s. The story began with her driving home late one April in 1968 with her nephew John. She was shocked to fleetingly see the approximately 4-foot-tall animal emerge from the watery depths and shuffle its way to the heart of a nearby scrubland. And it was a creature that Walsh would never forget, even though it was in view for just a few seconds. Gray in color, with what looked like a tough, leathery skin, it had a snout resembling that of an anteater, a slim trunk, long back legs, and a pair of short forelimbs that dangled as it waddled along, sideways no less, by the edge of the road before it vanished into the scrub. Now, the local newspaper, the Daily Telegraph, recognized the publicity the story would surely create, and they splashed the details across its front page. An article entitled, "And Now It's the Monster of Narrabeen," and with the subtitle of "Loch Ness Was Never Like This," the details of Mabel Walsh's story were laid out, which, of course, provoked more reports about this fantastic creature. Some of them sounded decidedly sensationalized, since they suggested the monster of the deep had taken to dragging sheep and cows and even horses to their deaths in the heart of the lagoon, the most unlikely action for a creature barely 4 feet in height. Others spoke of near hysterical tones of seeing a bright red-colored clawed hand come out of a hole in the ground at the lake and try and grab a terrified youngster. The final word on the matter, though, came from Mabel Walsh, who started the controversy and who told newspaper staff people might call her crazy, but She was absolutely sure there was a bizarre creature in Narrabeen Lake. And it transpired. Not very many people called her crazy. The Daily Telegraph's audience excitedly lapped it all up, and sales-wise, its staff were very happy indeed. The story was made all the more bizarre by the fact the creature she saw was not the only resident weirdo in that particular area. Still talking about the creatures from Sydney, we now have to take a trip to the vast, picturesque Blue Mountains. Chiefly composed of a huge plateau that borders Sydney's bustling metropolitan area, the mountains sit in the central region of what's now known as the Sydney Basin. And it's home to one of the area's most famous attractions, a tall trio of peaks known as the Three Sisters. Many, though, claim the Blue Mountains are home to something even more spectacular than these three rocky women, the Australian equivalent of the Sasquatch, or as it's known in the land down under, the Yowie. Of course, nobody could claim that what Mabel Walsh saw was a Yowie, but the creature she encountered was seen not at all far from where that huge, hulking apes are also seen. It only makes her case seem, for lack of a better term, a little more weird. Then we turn to the Norwegian sea monster. 19th century sea serpent seeker Henry Lee, recorded at Archdeacon of Mold, gives the following account of an incident that occurred there on the 28th of July in 1845. In the Archdeacon's own words, that was the Reverend Mr. Dean Ball, J.C. Lunn, bookseller and printer, G.S. Krogh, merchant, Christian Flang, Lunn's apprentice, and John L. Ginnis, laborer, went out on Romsdal Fjord fishing. The sea was, after a warm, sunshiny day, quite calm. About 7 o'clock in the afternoon, at a little distance from the shore, near the ballast place in the mold hole, they saw a large marine animal which slowly moved itself forward, as it appeared to them, with the help of two fins on the fore part of the body nearest the head, which they judged by the boiling of the water on both sides of it. The visible part of the body appeared to be between 40 and 50 feet long and moved in undulations like a snake. The body was round and of a dark color, and it seemed to be several eels in thickness. As they discerned a waving motion in the water behind the animal, they concluded that part of the body was concealed under the water. But it was one continuous monster, they had no doubt about that. When the animal was about 100 yards from the boat, they noticed tolerably correctly its foreparts, which ended in a sharp snout. Its colossal head raised above the water in the form of a semicircle. The lower part wasn't visible. The color of the head was dark brown, the skin smooth. They didn't see the eyes or any mane or bristles on the throat. When the serpent came within a musket shot distance, Lunn fired at it and was certain the shot hit it in the head. After the shot, the creature dove and came up immediately, raised his neck in the air like a snake preparing to dart on his prey. After he turned and got his body in a straight line, which he appeared to do with great difficulty, he darted like an arrow straight for the boat. They reached the shore, and the animal, perceiving it had come into shallow water, dove immediately and disappeared into the deep. Well, such is the declaration of these four men, and nobody's caused to question their veracity. Or imagine they were seized with fear that they couldn't observe what took place so near to them. And there weren't many there or on other parts of Norwegian coast to longer doubt the existence of the sea serpent. The teller of this story was a longtime skeptical, as he had not been so fortunate to see the creature, but after the many accounts he read, the relations he's received from credible witnesses, he doesn't doubt that it exists. Then we have Ogopogo. While Loch Ness, Scotland's Nessie is certainly the world's most famous lake monster, it doesn't stand or, shall we say, swim alone. Numerous lakes around the world are said to be the lairs of monstrous serpents of the deep. In all likelihood, some sightings of these alleged creatures due to mistaken identity of a catfish or a sturgeon, both of which can grow to impressive size. But there are reports that simply can't be dismissed in such a down-to-earth fashion. Let's talk about Ogopogo of Okanagan Lake in British Columbia. It's interesting to note that Okanagan Lake is like Loch Ness, a place of considerable size, one in which a colony of predominantly underwater-based creatures could survive and thrive. It's more than 80 miles long, 3 miles wide, and just short of 250 feet deep. And like the Scottish cousin Nessie, Ogopogo has a long, rich history of sightings. We don't really know how far back in history the creatures of Okanagan Lake extend, but we may say for sure that the Native Americans who live in that area as early as the 1700s knew that the waters of the lake were home to something monstrous and terrifying. That much is evident by the name they gave to the beast, or far more likely, beast. They called it the Nahuatl, appropriately it translates into English as Lake Demon. And maybe Lake Demon was too horrific for the locals, and they settled on Ogopogo. Now, the story of the name is an intriguing and winding one. As the late cryptozoologist Mark Chorvinsky noted, the name Ogopogo might suggest to some it's an Indian word, but all evidence points to a modern origin. According to Mary Moon, author of Ogopogo, the Okanagan Mystery, 1924, a local named Bill Brimblecombe sang a song parodying a popular British music hall tune at a Rotary Club luncheon. This took place in Vernon, a city in the northern Okanagan Valley. According to the lyrics, "I'm looking for the Ogopogo. His mother was a mutt and his father was a whale. I'm going to put a little bit of salt on his tail." When it comes to the eyewitness accounts of Ogopogo, the list is impressive. Most witnesses describe a large creature from 15 to 25 feet, and on occasion even as long as 50 feet, serpentine in appearance. And sometimes displaying undulating humps and a neck that occasionally rises out of the water to a height of 6 or 7 feet. Now, if that's true, this effectively rules out sturgeon or catfish as being the guilty parties. And with that said, we're going to look at some of the evidence in support of the theory that the Okanagan Lake is a domain of monsters. We're going to go back to September 16, 1926. On this date, the Ogopogo was really thrown into the limelight. Literally dozens of people, in fact, no fewer than 30 vehicles, saw a mysterious creature in the vicinity of Okanagan Mission Beach. Like so many others, all were unanimous in their belief the creature was an immense serpent-like animal. On July 2nd, 1947, Mr. Cray got a look at an Ogopogo and said the creature had a long, sinuous body, 30 feet in length, consisting of about 5 undulations, apparently separated from each other by a good 2-foot space, in which that part of the undulations would have been underwater. There appeared to be a forked tail, of which only one half came above the water. From time to time, the whole thing submerged and came up again. Then we go forward 40 years. There's the case of Ernie Garreau, a hunting guide, who spotted a 15-foot-long creature in the waters of the lake in December 1989. Whatever the creature was, it was like nothing he'd ever seen before. It swam real gracefully, had a head shaped like a football and a long neck. And to date, the number of reports of Ogopogo in the hundreds. Now, as to what the creature might be, surviving creatures from the Jurassic area, giant eel, or something else entirely unknown to science, the answers still elude both monster hunters and those who've been fortunate enough to encounter this famous monster. And I would point out that the ones I talk about are just a few of the many stories of strange creatures that inhabit this continent with us. Well, we've run out of time, and since this is Friday, we'll be back on Monday, when once again you'll be listening to Ken Hudnall and the Ken Hudnall Show. Until then, have a truly great evening.